real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls. We've got Chris at the phones today, and we're going to have a good conversation talking about marriage, Ted.
Good.
My wife told me the other day that I don't take her to expensive places anymore. So I took her to the gas station.
Yeah. Which is, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
That was actually funnier about, you know, 4 years ago.
Yeah,
and gas
right,
prices
right.
were a little higher, but so. Then someone has said the most important four words for a successful marriage, I'll do the dishes.
Uh-huh.
I think that's right behind the three most important words for marriage, the three words that every woman loves to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Let's eat out.
Oh,
so,
there you
anyway,
go.
There.
All right. Yeah, right.
someone has said a successful marriage requires falling in love many times and always with the same person. And, of course, that's
vital. Yeah.
One of the challenges we have here. Maybe something from Henny Youngman that's always good to get, you know. Yeah. He says, some people ask the secret of our long marriage. He says, we take time to go to a restaurant 2 times a week, a little candlelight dinner, soft music, and dancing. She goes, Tuesdays, I go Fridays.
Yeah, so, yeah,
all right, now
right.
we're going to talk today about the first few years of marriage. Looking forward to our conversation with Jim Burns. Jim is president of Homeward, executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. He's written thousands of, well, I don't know if it's thousands, but he's there, you know, they're more, you know, just about everybody knows how to read, has read something by Jim Burns. I think that's probably a safe way to put it. And Jim and his wife, Kathy, have 3 daughters and now a grandchild. And so we're going to, if we run out of things to talk about the first few years of marriage, we're going to get into grandchildren. But Jim, good to have you back with us.
Neil, great to be back. I was writing as fast as I could. You should do stand-up. Those are some great lines.
You know, Google is your friend, so check it out.
Boy, is that the truth. That's right.
Jim hosts the Homeward Radio show. You hear it Saturday mornings here on Faith Radio, and I always love to hear your good conversations and insights. So we're going to talk about a new book that you've written with Doug Fields, and this is kind of a follow-up to Getting Ready for Marriage. It's the first few years of marriage, and I know that you're concerned that we probably don't really know all we should know about making a solid, strong marriage.
Well, you're right. Doug and I were desperate. We have 4 kids who got married in a very short time between us, and we realized as we started looking at even material, there was very little material out there, and both of us said we needed this book because our first few years weren't easy. You know, you go through your engagement period, and you're doing all kind of the right stuff, and then you get married, and all of a sudden you begin to drift because you're getting busy with work, and you're getting busy with new careers, and you're getting busy with, you know, sometimes making a baby and all these other things. And really, divorce happens in the first 4 or 5 years. The majority of divorces in America happens in the first 4 or 5 years. So it's apparently something that a lot of people need and don't work on it in those first 4 or 5 years.
Jim, Dr. Gary Chapman wrote the foreword of the book, and he made this statement. He says, marriage cannot be simulated. And I thought, you know, that's not how culture looks at it, because there's so much emphasis on cohabitation. So what is it that's so distinctive that marriage cannot be simulated?
Well, it has to be something that you work on at all times. And and work is a bad word, but work can also be a good word. And so when you are intentional about it, intentional, proactive connection, you know, causes a healthy marriage. And if you fade and not put energy into it, you know, it was that great theologian, he's sort of up by you guys, his name was Vince Lombardi of the Green Bay Packers. You know, he said, when you've strayed away from the basics, you've gone a long ways toward defeat. And both Doug and I think that in the first few years, we tend to stray away from the basics of, you know, all of a sudden we quit doing dates and we quit, you know, putting the same kind of energy that we did before marriage. And what Gary has said over and over again, I'm so grateful he wrote the foreword. He's been a mentor of mine for years. But what Gary is trying to say is look at, you know, you've got to work on this thing at all times. I mean, what I love about, I've been married 43 years. Gary's been married a lot longer than me. You know, he still talks about the idea that you have to keep, you know, the marriage fresh. And, you know, Kathy and I had a horrible first few years. And we wondered if we were going to make it. And what we realized was that perseverance, you know, is a good thing. And so as we persevered and we began to learn some of the tools, even the stuff that we, you know, are talking about in the first few years, you know, it changed the way we did our relationship and the way we did life. And, you know, we would both say that, you know, we are so glad that we didn't make the poor decision of walking away in those first few years when we actually talked about it and thought about it. I would be on the way, Neil, to – I was a youth pastor. I'd be on the way to, you know, talking to the kids. Kathy and I would be in an argument, and then I'd talk to the kids on the joy of a Christian family, feeling somewhat hypocritical.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, I think we've all had, you know, those moments in ministry sure. where we realize that, you know, things could be better at home. And, you know, one of the things that you point out right away, I mean, it's drift. Is that a byproduct of busyness? I mean, is busyness really at the heart of much of what we're talking about today?
Well, I think it is for some families. In fact, I think actually this breathless pace in which we tend to live our lives could be one of the biggest issues in the American family, period, or in our lives, but definitely in our marriages. And so when we're busy, we do begin to drift. And so, you know, what takes place is we begin to, as I was saying, stray away from the basics because we're just too busy. And then we really kind of start drifting. Then we look up one day and we're lost. And then we make some really poor decisions about, you know, the relationship. So we have to be careful. We, you know what? When I graduated from my grad school at Princeton, oh my goodness, years and years ago, a friend of mine, I didn't stay for the graduation because I wanted to get back and do ministry. And a friend of mine wrote me a note, and he said, "Dear Jim, if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. You know, love, David. We missed you at graduation."
Sure.
You know, that was prophetic for me because I wasn't going to be in the arms of another woman or those kind of things. I was just going to be so busy doing quote-unquote important things that, you know, especially in those first few years, I was missing my relationship with Kathy. And I kind of didn't know it. I didn't come from a Christian home, and I didn't come from great marriage mentors in my own family background. And so I didn't really know what you do or how you do it. And so, you know, I didn't realize it was fading. And Kathy had to say to me over and over again, "This isn't working," you know. And it was humbling.
Yeah. I don't think any of us really like to hear those words. And yet how thankful we are to hear them, all right?
No, exactly. And yet we do need to sometimes say, you know, if it's not working, that's fine. Fix it. I had a story, and we actually tell it in this book, but I had a situation where last year I got to meet my first astronaut, and I was thrilled. A friend of mine said, "See that guy sitting in the third row? He's an astronaut. You want to go meet him?" And I went, "Yeah." So I was speaking, and I went over to him, and we happened to be right in the shadows of NASA where I was speaking, and I said, "What is it like to have these people," I'm pointing to NASA, "in charge of you when you're out in space?" He'd been up in space twice. And he said, "Well, actually, they're only in charge 3% of the time. The rest of the time, we're doing course corrections." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, no, it's just a bunch of course corrections. And if we drift too far, then we're not going to land back, you know, on planet Earth, and that's not a good thing." And I thought, well, in some ways, marriage is that. You know, it's doing course corrections, constant course corrections, and so that the drift, you know, doesn't happen so bad that you wake up one day and say, you know, "I'm not even in love with this person anymore," because, you know, you are. It's just a matter of, you know, the drift happened and you didn't take care of it.
You know, it's interesting thinking in terms of all the pre-marriage options that we have available today. Is readiness for marriage still an issue? I know that, you know, we're talking the first few years of marriage, but no, you really recommend, you know, courses and steps. I mean, you would think that we shouldn't have to have any problems.
Well, you know, here's an interesting statement, and it actually comes out of the state of Oklahoma. So this is not a Christian comment, but it's the state comment. They say that there is a 31% better chance that people will stay married if they have premarital counseling or education. And actually, states like Oklahoma, Florida, Minnesota, they either lower their marriage application fee or just take it out if people will have premarital education. You know, the problem is, and you mentioned it right at the beginning of this, is that a lot of people play at marriage. It's pretend. They would call it pretend marriage in cohabitation. And just take the science of it. The science of cohabitation says, you know, more divorces, more adultery, less physical intimacy satisfaction. You know, the list goes on. So we've got a lot of people who, in my humble opinion, did it wrong. They didn't get the kind of counseling they needed or the kind of help they needed, and they made choices that didn't enhance the fact that it could help their marriage like crazy if they had not already cohabitated. And I'm getting that from the secular world. They have a problem because there's a moral issue that they don't want to talk about. But, you know, frankly, it's not working. So what we do find is that when couples – the statistics just change, Neil, like crazy when couples get premarital education, when they are working on their marriage, and when they're not living together. The ability to stay married you know, last like crazy. And then when couples work on their marriage in those first few years and build the solid foundation, then that's what takes them through the rest of their through their married life. And they look back at it and say, yeah, we made some good decisions there. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't do it that way.
We're going to talk more with Jim Burns about the first few years of marriage, 8 ways to strengthen your I do. That's the title of the new book that Jim and his good friend Doug Fields have co-written. And we've got a couple of copies to give away and would love to get one in your hands. You can sign up for the drawing, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Maybe you have family members that are just newly married. You want to just give them some great insight. We'll get more, and this book would be a good resource. Or you may have a question about your marriage journey. You can join in the conversation, 877-93-FAITH, or submit it online. You go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. Jim Burns, of course, is the president of Homeward and executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family, the Azusa Pacific University, best-selling author and broadcaster. And in just a moment, we're going to talk about something called the 1% rule. We'll find out what that is. Stay tuned for more. Well, that's the assumption, right? It's all about love, but, you know, love and infatuation kind of wanes a bit. And if you're newly married, you know, as time passes, you can kind of drift apart. And suddenly there are challenges that are really common to any marriage, but maybe seem new to you. We're talking about some ways to strengthen your I do with Jim Burns. The new book is called The First Few Years of Marriage. Jim is the president of Homeward. You hear him on the Homeward Radio broadcast Saturday mornings here on Faith Radio. Homeward.com is the website, by the way. He and his wife, Kathy, have been married for some 40 years and have 3 daughters and grandchildren. And Jim, you address something called the 1% rule in the book.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. 1% isn't very much time, really. But and we ask people, hey, would in your first few years, would you be willing to give each other 1%? And people would go, of course, that's easy. And, you know, 1% actually equals 1 hour and 40 minutes. You know, that's not really that much time. But in 1 hour and 40 minutes, you could go on a date. And although Doug and I don't believe this is the, you know, end all, we do believe that we say this when we speak at our Refreshing Marriage conferences, we've never seen couples who date on a weekly or at least a regular basis who end up fading because they're working on their marriage. And a date isn't to, you know, talk about insurance and, you know, the kids or whatever. A date is actually to, you know, really court each other and relate to each other and have serious fun. And for couples who are doing that, if they take that hour and 40 minutes, and it doesn't have to be, you know, they don't have money, that's fine. Kathy and I didn't. We co-opt babysitting, and, you know, sometimes our date, we live by the ocean, so our date might be walking at the ocean. So it wasn't fancy, but, you know, really connecting. And so we challenge couples. That's actually one of the gauges is, are you having serious fun? And so do you still have fun? And, you know, do you date regularly where you really court each other? And every date doesn't have to be perfect, but it's the idea. My wife, I was a busy youth pastor at the time, and that was also Doug. He's 10 years younger than me. He was in my youth group back in the, you know, long, long time ago, so I've kind of done life with him. And we realized that date, we could be busy as all get out, but when our wives knew that we would give them the quote-unquote hour and 40, it's just a cutesy little thing. It could be 2 hours. It could be an hour and a half. But, you know, if we were giving them that time, they seemed to be fine with that as long as they knew they were going to get that date and that on that date we'd have some fun. You know, so I think that's a key factor. When I was doing my PhD, I did my entire, you know, thing was on traits of a healthy family. And what I found was that these traits of a healthy family, one of the main ones was play. So when families play together, they stay together. But also when couples play and have fun together, they stay together. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And what we're doing, we introduced that in a chapter, which was one of the gauges, laugh daily and date weekly. And again, our assumption is that when couples do that, it works. But again, the truth is that we get serious, we get busy, we get distracted with all the other things of life, and we don't laugh daily with each other, and we don't date weekly.
Well, the next chapter, we sort of touched on it, but it's the problem of busyness, of a slow down. I'm just wondering, you know, how do we slow down really? I mean, we're tied to our screens, and, you know, if there's children that come along early in the marriage? I mean, it's just go all the time. Is there any strategy to really slow down?
Well, I think it takes deep discipline, frankly, because you're right. We are so busy. And you know, one of the things I had to look in my own life is that, and Doug says this all the time, is that oftentimes busy people are broken people. And, you know, because there's something going, you know, why are they so busy? We can stay busy, but we just have to have the discipline of being able to say no. For me, it was a wake up when I, you know, about a few years into the marriage, Kathy said, I'm not sure I want to have children. And I went, what? You know, our first dates, we talked about children. And she said, well, you're great with everybody else's kids. You're working 7 days a week and most nights. And, you know, I'm really, you know, hurting here. I feel like I'm being left out. And I had to say something to her, Neil, that I'm not proud of. And I want to make sure that your listeners hear the whole thing. I said, I'm having an affair. Now, the affair wasn't with a woman, wasn't with a man. The affair was with my job. My mistress was my job, and it was getting in the way of my relationship with Kathy. And that's not in God's economy. I think it's God first, then our marriage, then our children, if we have children, and then our vocation. And if people can learn that earlier on, so Kathy and I made a decision there. We would. That's when we decided to do the non-negotiable date night. We also decided we would only be out 3 nights a week, which was crazy. I was out, you know, 6 and 7. But we decided to take that time and connect with each other. I think it was one of the smartest decisions we as a couple ever made, was to slow down. You know, she used to say to me, we have a Messiah. He's doing very well. You don't need to replace him. She hasn't said that to me for a long time. But, you know, in some ways, I say that now. You know, Homeward's the largest provider of parenting seminars in the U.S. And I say that to soccer moms and hockey dads all the time because it's kind of the same thing that we do, we just get so busy, so we have to say no. I remember speaking at Promise Keepers Pastors Conference years and years ago, and Jack Hayford, who was a real mentor in my life, said to me after I said to him, you know, what's your secret to leadership success, major leader? He was what they called the pastor of ceremonies at the Diamondback Stadium, and where these guys were, you know, doing their thing. And he said to me, you know, Jim, it's what I've chosen not to do, not what I've chosen to do. I've had to say no to really important things to say yes to the most important. And I went, wow, the discipline of doing that was phenomenal. But, you know, he just lost his wife recently, and they had a beautiful marriage, and they had wonderful kids and grandkids. And, you know, I've watched his life over the years, and he had the ability to say he was busy and successful in his work and in his mission. But the fact of the matter was is that he said no a lot of times so that he could say yes to the priorities that he felt were the right ones, which would be God, his marriage, his children, and then his vocation.
Talking the first few years of marriage, 8 ways to strengthen your I do. Jim Burns, my guest today. Jim, one of the things that obviously we talk about is that we discover early on in marriage that, you know, there are some differences and we have to work through that. And you know, there is that, you know, theory says you can only change yourself. But, you know, we live in a time now where we want to be true to ourselves. So how do we balance those two together?
Well, we have to quit trying to change our spouse, and I'm an expert at that. I've tried to change Kathy for 43 years. And you know what? What I loved about Kathy, we dated all through college. And what I loved about Kathy, I began to not like when we got married because I wanted her to be more like me. Mm-hmm. But yet when we were dating, I sort of liked that. So what I had to learn kind of the hard way was to – during those first few years was I had to learn to celebrate our differences. And that was hard for me. But it wasn't that I could, you know, just simply, you know, try to change her. I mean, I had to really work on myself. And so what happened was, even in our communication style, I had to, you know, I was very defensive, and Kathy also was very defensive. We didn't know how to communicate. But what I've learned over the years, and one of the things we say in the book, is that, you know, communication is a learned trait. So we can learn to communicate better, but we also are going to have to understand that we have to, you know, embrace those differences. I'm an extrovert, so I will have a shallow conversation with everybody at the party, and Kathy's an introvert, so she's going to sit on the couch and have a very deep and meaningful conversation. And then early on, we would leave the party, and I would say, hey, did you get to meet everybody? And she'd say, no, but I was totally innocent. I loved my conversation with so-and-so. But what I was trying to say was, you were rude. You didn't meet everybody. Well, that was my impression. Now, I love that we're at some place and I see Kathy settle up next to somebody. They have this meaningful thing. I've even seen Kathy, you know, take their hands and pray with them and, you know, very, you know, good conversation. And, you know, I get back in the car and go, well, you know, I talked about, you know, we're in California, so, you know, I talked about the Dodgers and the Angels and now the Rams and the Chargers and, you know, life and the church, but it was all shallow. And, you know, that's okay, but, you know, she's had to also learn to realize that, you know, that's me. I'm going to be the one who wants to be, you know, at the party the longest, and she's going to be the one who, you know, I've had enough, I want to leave, and we have to learn to, you know, embrace those differences. And for us, it was finances, you know, key issues of marriage. I mean, finances, even the way our kids did education, the way we approach God. I mean, I do the one-year Bible, and I've done it since 1983, every year, every time. And I just, that, you know, turns me on. I love that. And, you know, Kathy just can't even understand that because she goes, why do you do the same thing every year? You know, she spends her time with God in a different way. So even the way we approach God, you know, is a little bit different. So I can't tell her to do my thing. She's tried it, and she didn't think it was, you know, that for 1 year she thought it was really meaningful, and then she went on to something else. So again, we just have to learn to celebrate those differences, and that takes wisdom and maturity and a length of time, but also the knowledge of realizing that, you know, if you are what you are attracted to, you begin to attack. And we actually talk about that in the book, and how to learn to appreciate those differences. And when you do, then your relationship is enhanced big time.
Well, we celebrate the differences, but choose the positive. Some great advice from Jim Burns. We're talking to Jim today about the first few years of marriage, 8 ways to strengthen your I do. It's one of the latest from Jim. Jim's president of Homeward and executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. You hear him weekends on the Homeward broadcast, and he's written dozens of books. In fact, 1.5 million resources have been in print and sold, and so we're always happy to get a chance to talk with Jim. We're going to talk a little bit more in the moments ahead about what does it mean to be tone deaf in marriage. We're finding ways to strengthen your I do, and obviously if you're tone deaf, that's not going to help. So more just ahead with Jim Burns, talking about the first few years of marriage here on Connecting Faith. And thought, as long as we have just a moment before the break, enjoy a little bit of Andrew Peterson.
Well, I was 19, you were 21, the year we got engaged, and everyone said we were much too young, but we did it anyway. We got the rings for 40 each from a pawn shop down the road, and we said our vows and took the leap now 15 years ago. And we went dancing in the minefields, we went sailing in the storms, and it was harder than we dreamed, but I believe that's what the promise is for. Well, I do are the two most famous last words, the beginning of the end. But to lose your life for another, I've heard, is a good place to begin. 'Cause the only way to find your life is to lay your own life down.
Is a blessing. There's no question about it. If we, you know, put a little time and effort into it, your marriage, when it's new, it's exciting, but, you know, time passes, couples can begin to drift, and there are challenges that are common in any marriage. So we're learning about how we can strengthen your I do. 8 ways to strengthen your I do is the subtitle of Jim Burns' new book, The First Few Years of Marriage. He co-wrote it with Doug Fields. With Jim and Doug are part of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at the Azusa Pacific University, and Jim is on the Homeward broadcast each weekend here on Faith Radio. Jim, one of the areas that you talk about is tone deafness. I don't know. You and I aren't going to do any singing together, but well, say more about tone deaf, being tone deaf.
Well, actually, you don't want me to sing, and you don't want my partner in crime here, Doug Fields, to sing either, because both of us are tone deaf. It's the funniest thing. I even, when I was younger, I tried to get some guitar lessons, and from a friend of mine who was a worship leader, and he said, you are just a uncoordinated strummer. And he said, plus you're tone deaf. And I came back to Kathy to look for strength. And I said, Kathy, his name's Bill. I said, Bill thinks I'm tone deaf. And she said, you are so tone deaf. She said, you know how like in church, I'll put my finger in my ear. And I said, well, I thought that was because you could then sing on key. She goes, yeah, I can sing on key because then I'm not listening to you. But you know, I think a lot of us are tone deaf when it comes to our relationships. And I know I get tone deaf, and I'll even tell you what I can even, I now know what my kind of issues are, my triggers, if you would, if I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And for me, a lot of times it's tired. If I'm dangerously tired, boy, I go into, sarcasm or pessimism pretty quickly. And so what I've had to learn to do is at least see how I'm tone deaf, and then how to change that. And for me, that means to choose the positive. And actually, I call it positive adaptability. And I got that from a guy named Neil Clark Warren, who has been a mentor of mine for years. And he's actually everybody has seen his face because he's 83 years old and he has this beautiful head of hair, and I don't. But he's a marriage expert, and he's a Christian, happens to be the eHarmony founder, eHarmony.com. But I said to Neil once, I said, what is the greatest trait of compatibility? And he's an expert on compatibility. He said, he didn't even pause. He said, it's being positive, and I would add being adaptable. And I went, wow. And then he said, stuff happens to everybody. And if you're not in a crisis, you're going to be, because things just happen. And he said, the people who do well through those things, because even people who have the same issues, some do well, some don't. He said it's because they're positive and they're adaptable, and I think that's part of the tone. You're setting a tone for a marriage. You're setting a tone for a relationship that's much more positive. You're setting the atmosphere, and you've got to be proactive with that. I watched my mom do that. She was really good at it. Neil, my dad was an alcoholic, and he wasn't a horrible guy. He was a functioning alcoholic, but he wasn't a great relationship guy. And my mom could set a tone, not fake or Pollyanna, but she could set this tone where, people were drawn to her, and yet I'm sure she was mad at my dad, and I'm sure they had their moments. But in our home, it was a warm, loving place. And so I've tried to do that in my home with Kathy and with my kids. I want to be the person like my mom who brought, affection, warmth, and encouragement. And that's really a tone, setting the tone. And it's a discipline because, you can be angry 24/7, but I love the Winston Churchill, quote where he says, if you throw stones at every barking dog, you're never going to get to where you want to go. And so tone-wise, I think sometimes we just have to swallow it. And for me, and Doug too, we talk, and I don't think it's in the book, but it's been something that we've been working on later because we speak together a lot. One of our big things is we make people say, does it really matter? Hmm. And, the truth is let's take the toothpaste tube. Some people squeeze, my wife squeezes, and I roll it like Jesus, of course, would do. And, and that bugged me. And then all of a sudden I go, does it really matter? I mean, honestly, does it really matter that Kathy does the toothpaste tube differently? I mean, seriously, I'm getting angry at her for something that's just silly. And I had to learn that, no, it doesn't really matter. And I can be positive toward her. And we quote a section in our book. We call it the magic ratio. And we actually quote a man named John Gottman, who everybody who does marriage, research quotes him because he's the, king of marriage research, University of Washington. But he says something that if really a couple, he can tell if a couple's going to do well or not by the positivity toward each other. So if you're positive toward your spouse, and he calls it a 5-to-1 ratio, then you're going to do well. But he said if it's a 1-to-1, you're positive and negative, just 1-to-1, he goes, that's, bound to be a divorce if you're not careful. So it takes proactivity to set the tone. And I've found that's, that's key to my marriage, that, there are just things Doug oftentimes says, don't say everything you think. And, I've had to sometimes swallow hard, bite my tongue and just not say it. And, it really enhances the relationship. And I didn't really need to say it, Kathy. And There you go.
And by the end of it, you look back and say, well, does it really matter? And the fact is, probably 90% of the time, it doesn't.
No. And you know what? Sometimes, don't get me wrong, sometimes it does matter. And sometimes you got to go, oh, my goodness, you know, I've put in enough deposits here. I'm going to take a withdrawal because this matters. And so you have that conversation, and that's where conflict, you know, management comes in. And that's, you know, you got to learn to fight fair and whatnot. And we sure help young couples do that within this book project. But again, most of the time, it kind of doesn't matter, you know, now that I look back over all these years.
Well, speaking of fighting, you say that fear is related. It's part of marital conflict. How are those related?
Well, you know, what's fascinating is a lot of fights stem from fear. And, you know, years ago, I learned this from Gary Smalley, who passed away a year ago, but he was another mentor in my life. And, you know, Gary basically thought that most conflict came from whatever your fear factor was. So, you know, you have a fear of rejection, or you have a fear of failure or worthlessness, or, you know, unhappiness or loss or whatever. And that's relating to how you're relating to your spouse. So one of the things we want to do, and we have helped so many young marrieds with this, is what is your fear issue? You know, Doug takes on this really well, and he does a really good job. And one of the things he says is he wants to be liked. And so if his wife says, you know, Doug, I wish you would have taken, you know, the dirty plate to the sink, then in his mind, he goes to – his wife's name is Kathy, too, which gets real weird when we speak because, you know, we both have Kathy spelled with a C. But, you know, he says, well, Kathy doesn't like me anymore. Well, no. Kathy just said, would you mind moving the plate over? But his fear is this fear of rejection and not being liked. It comes from some family past in his life and whatnot. And so he had to get past that to realize that's his fear. That's his problem. That's not his wife's problem. She just simply said a very nice thing. Would you mind moving the plate over to the sink? And so when we get in touch with what our fear issues are, I have a fear. I'm always trying to protect myself, my fragile self-image or something, and yet I'm created in God's image. I'm still having to deal with that. So with Kathy, I'll get defensive because I'm doing the path of protection rather than the path to intent to learn and kind of work through the conflict, and all of a sudden now we're being defensive about something that really had nothing to do with the, you know, conflict. So what we're saying is fear is lurking behind most marital conflict, and we try to help couples find out what that fear is, and then we actually teach them a little thing called the fear chase. We called it the conflict dance in the Getting Ready for Marriage project, and this time we call it the fear chase. And couples tend to really, really get that when they identify what their primary fear is. It really helps them move through that.
And is the key to breaking that cycle or that chain, is it just forgiveness, or is it just kind of, you know, rethinking, you know, maybe back in the does it matter category?
Well, I think actually forgiveness is one of the threads throughout a good and healthy marriage, that if you don't have forgiveness, or if you don't give forgiveness and receive forgiveness, then, you know, it's going to be tough. I think part of it is also choosing a more healthy response. So a lot of times when we're in conflict, our response is not good. And then we move to a healthy response. And the ultimate goal then is exactly what you're saying. The ultimate goal is forgiveness. And you know what's funny is I had to learn how to do the forgiveness thing right. I didn't really know how to do that. And so I would forgive but not forget, or I would forgive and then still, you know, have contempt for whatever Kathy had said. And I had to literally learn that I can't repress this. I just simply have to, you know, do forgiveness in the right way. And for me, it was I call it an arrogance issue. I would, in, you know, my morning devotional time, I'd say, God, forgive me for my sins, and they're a lot worse than what Kathy's doing, and yet I wouldn't forgive her for some of those because I repressed it, or I allowed, you know, contempt to kind of come in, and, you know, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So forgiveness is critical to a healthy marriage. Yeah.
One of the areas you talk about, of course, the intimacy, about you know, physical relationship, but you do talk about the value of the daily kiss. Let's say more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things that we've said to couples for years is that, you know, kissing is very intimate. In fact, there's a movie, it's a secular movie, but the prostitute says, I'll have, you know, physical intimacy. Well, I don't know that it's intimacy because that's, but she says, I'll have sex with my clients, but I won't kiss them. That's way too intimate. And the point being is that we say that that kissing is important. We actually even talk about the issue of kissing. And you know, Kathy and I challenge people to have the 15-second kiss a few times a day. And, you know, 15 seconds doesn't sound that long, but it kind of is. I remember we would do this when I would leave for work, and Kathy, I left earlier than Kathy, and my girls sometimes would go, "Mom and Dad, you're embarrassing us." Well, it wasn't anything. It was just kissing. It was sealing it, saying, you know what, I don't kiss anybody like this. I'm going to kiss you. And then when I would come home, we would do that. And again, my kids at certain ages, you know, teased us for it. You know what? I'm watching. I have one daughter who's getting married next month, and I have another daughter who's married and has been married a few years. And I'm watching them do that. I'm really, really proud of them. You know, sealing their love with a kiss. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It's not necessarily just talking about physical intimacy. It's talking about, you know, the connection that a kiss makes. So, you know, we have to be proactive. I talked to somebody a while ago who said, you know, we really haven't kissed in about, well, 8-10 years. And I went, that's terrible. That's a beautiful thing. And, you know, probably in premarital, they were kissing like crazy. Well, good for them.
You know, we just got a minute or two left. I'm interested, Jim, was there a turning point for you and Kathy? You know, you said you'd struggled early on in marriage,
yep.
But was there sort of a sense where, hey, we've crossed the divide here now, or we're you know, the foundation's solid, we're moving on the right track? What did that look like?
Yeah, there for us there was. We called it transitional generation. You know, the Bible says you inherit the sins of a previous generation to the third and fourth generation. And we said we're either going to recover or repeat. Both of us came from dysfunctional families. So we decided we would break that chain. And what we said, what will it take for us to break that chain of dysfunction? And best decision we've ever made, hardest decision we've ever made. But for us, that meant humbly going and getting some marriage counseling. I have a background in that. So, you know, I'm even more humbled that I had to, you know, go to, you know, and get some marriage counseling. It meant that we read a marriage book a year. We went to a conference. I mean, we dug into this and we watched it change. You know, when you talk about drift, well, this was like a boat. It was just a slow movement toward each other. And one day we looked up and said, you know, we haven't said the D word for a long time. Now, Kathy says the M word periodically, murder, but the D word, she had quit. And in a neat way, Neil, we watched our marriage. All of a sudden, you know, we went, wow, people are asking us to be marriage mentors, and we never dreamed that would be the case. And not that we were perfect, but, you know, we watched this move in a better direction because we put energy into it, and we did what we're challenging people to do in this book, and that's build that solid foundation early. We did some of that, you know, later in our marriage, unfortunately. When I say later, I'm saying, you know, 8-10 years into it. So, you know, it's never too late to do this, but I wished we would have done it earlier.
Jim Burns, always providing great insight for us. Jim Burns and Doug Fields have written a new book called The First Few Years of Marriage, 8 Ways to Strengthen Your I Do. Jim and Doug both lead the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University, and they speak to thousands of people around the world each year. Have got the many resources in print, and you can find out more at homeward.com. You want to find out about this book or the other great resources available. Jim, blessings to you. I love having you on Faith Radio and love the opportunity to connect whenever we can.
Well, Neil, great to be with you anytime, and I love Faith Radio, too. Just doing great, great stuff for the kingdom. Thank you.
Enjoy time with the grandson this afternoon, and we'll talk again down the road.
Yes, sir. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in to Connecting Faith today. Coming up in a moment, we'll do a little look back at 2017 and reflect on faith and culture with Tim Muehlhoff, who joins us every other Wednesday. He's up next on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and it's always a joy to connect with Tim Muehlhoff. We do that on an every other week basis. Tim serves as professor of communication at Biola University. He is also a wonderful author, and in fact, his latest book, Winsome Persuasion, Christian Influence in a Post-Christian World, received an award in the evangelism category from Christianity Today, Book of the Year Awards. So, Tim, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was unexpected. Didn't know it was being considered, but I think it's really hit a chord with people that we need to be winsome with each other. We've got to get away from this incivility that just seems to stop all politics and stops people of diverse opinions from talking to each other. So I think it really has resonated with people that we've got to have a change in how we communicate with each other.
And that's really at the heart of why we get together, to just talk about maybe ways we can communicate more effectively. You know, Tim, before we go on talk about our topic, say a bit more about the word winsome. I mean, it's one that we maybe toss around once in a while, but how do you define it?
Well, we think that as we look at the scriptures, there's different ways to communicate, and one of them is the prophetic voice, which we're not opposed to, but the prophetic voice is I speak my truth, I root it in God's word. So thus saith the Lord, and it's not really a conversation, it's pronouncement of God's truth. And there's certainly times that that should happen, but I think today the evangelical church, we've been locked in the prophetic voice, and our only strategy is to raise our voices when we oppose people. And winsome persuasion is more the attitude of the pastoral voice that we see in Scripture, where we're coming alongside of people. We're helping them. It's neighbor love. And I think winsome, Neil, is this idea of, hey, I could be wrong in this conversation. I don't think I'm right about everything, and I can laugh at myself. In our book, we really do take a good look at G.K. Chesterton, who is this awesome Christian defender of the faith, and he was 300-plus pounds, and he would debate everybody, Rudyard Kipling, H.G. Wells, and could laugh at himself and admit when he was wrong. And I think that's what we need today, is a more winsome give-and-take approach to communication rather than just beating the cultural war drums.
Well, it's a timely book, and congratulations again on the Christianity Today Book of the Year Award. Winsome Persuasion.
Yeah,
Christian influence in a post-Christian world. All right, so we're, you know, just about to the end of the year, and thought we'd do a little year-end review, perhaps, and look ahead. It was interesting to note that the Oxford Dictionary, their word of the year was youthquake, which apparently no one says. So what does that mean?
Well, I think it's a great word. The way they define it is a significant cultural, political, and social change arising from the actions or influence of young people. And I do think that, you know, millennials get really bad rap every once in a while. You know, they're over-addicted to social media, and they're never present in a conversation. But, man, there's a lot of great things young people are doing today. They really do care about social issues, and they don't care about the culture war today. They're done with it. They're so sick of the culture wars that dominate the news that they're tired of it. So they don't want to fight a war with transgendered people. They want to show compassion to transgendered people. They don't want to fight wars about immigration. They want to embrace and help people who are in need. And so young people, you know, Oxford Dictionary is mostly focusing on what's happened in Great Britain, and they really feel like the youth movement was really influential in the past year politically. And I think as Christians, we need to think long and hard about the youth movement within evangelical circles. We better understand what the under 30 crowd is thinking today and be able to speak their language as we try to reinforce biblical convictions. So there's a youth quake happening within evangelicalism, and we better be aware of it, or I think we're going to turn people off.
You know, I guess the other concern about that, I guess, in terms of evangelical church is that, you know, studies seem to indicate that so many youth aren't, once they leave, they don't come back. I mean, it used to be maybe students would leave for a season, but they'd come back. But it doesn't seem like they're coming back like they used to.
Yeah, and I think for two reasons, Neil, and this may be a little bit controversial, but one, they do equate evangelicalism with the Republican Party. There's this, just this one-on-one correlation in their mind that to be evangelical is to be Republican. And in their estimation, the election of President Trump was unforgivable. That he, in an age of sexual harassment, you have a candidate Trump admitting on an Access Hollywood interview that Billy Bush got fired in a heartbeat for this interview, is that he basically said, I'm a man of power, and I can grope women, and I can take advantage of women because I'm a person of power. And so young evangelicals did not vote for President Trump. Now, it's true that 80% of evangelicals did vote for President Trump, but if you take a look at the specifics, it was the older evangelicals that voted for President Trump. The younger evangelicals are done with it. They're like, I cannot reconcile a man who brags about violating women and my Christianity. I just can't do it. So the whole Roy Moore thing, I mean, they're like, this is insanity. I can't vote for a man. We can't support a man who's been accused of child molesting. And so young evangelicals are saying, if to be evangelical means I have to be Republican, then I'm done. I'm done with being an evangelical. So I think we've got to do a better job of saying, hey, those two are not synonymous. And there's things wrong with the Republican platform, and there's things wrong with the Democratic platform. But don't think to be an evangelical, that means you have to vote in a particular direction. Young evangelicals just simply will walk away from the faith rather than be told how they're supposed to vote politically.
Tim, I'm wondering, you know, as a communications professor at a university, a Christian university, your challenge is to equip and train up young men and women to be future leaders. So as you look ahead to 2018, what's your challenge in training them up? What do they need to sort of hang on to? What things are, you know, we can flex on this, but these are the core truths we need to hang on to?
Well, I would say two things, Neil, to that answer. One, remember what Jesus said? He said, I want you to love me with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. I think young evangelicals today, I think because of social media, Neil, they have a lot of questions today, and they have doubts. And it's everything from, I have a gay friend, and so, you know, what am I supposed to do with that? I have great compassion towards the gay community. I have a transgendered friend, and I don't know what to do with that. Next, there's just questions that are out there that the new atheists have been raising very effectively. Everything from genocide in the Old Testament, right? I mean, isn't genocide wrong? And yet in the Old Testament, it seems like God's commanding the armies of Israel to kill all men, women, children, and cattle, and that's just morally wrong, and I don't know what to do with that. And if Jesus is the only way to get to God, well, most of the world doesn't subscribe to Christianity. So what am I supposed to do with that? And so young evangelicals today have a million questions about the problem of evil, because every time they turn on their television, every time they go on social media, there's a new mass shooting, there's new acts of terrorism, and they're just stuck like, hey, but I thought God was good, powerful, and concerned, and yet where is he? Why isn't he doing more? So we're going to lose young evangelicals if we don't sit with them and say, listen, I get your doubts. I wrestle with these doubts. But don't leave the faith. Wrestle with the faith. And then second, we have got to show that you have to speak the truth in love, that both of those are equally important when it comes to the scriptures. Because for a long time, Christians have just focused on the content of our beliefs and not on how to speak that truth in love. And again, young evangelicals are like, I'm done with the condemnation of other people. I'm done speaking poorly of the gay community or poorly of the transgender community or individuals, and I'm just not doing that anymore. So, Neil, I think the young generation, we've got to provide them answers. Here's why we support traditional marriage. Here's why we think the Bible is inspired and the Quran's not. Not to demonize the Quran, but we think the Bible is inspired by God. And so we've got to help these young evangelicals with all their doubts. We've got to teach them how to speak the truth in love. Otherwise, they're leaving in droves, Neil, and we've got to find a way of creating the possibility that they can be evangelical with all of their doubts, with all of their great compassion towards people outside the Christian community.
So we look ahead to the new year. We want to just reaffirm that we'll understand and accept that there are doubts, and we'll wrestle with the faith, and we'll speak the truth in love. Those are a couple of good principles to head into the new year. Tim, we need more time to just flesh it out more, but thank you for carving out a bit of time with us today. I always love talking with you.
Okay.
Tim Muehlhoff is a professor of communication at Biola University, an author of the award-winning book, Winsome Persuasion, Christian Influence in a Post-Christian World. Tim Muehlhoff joins us every other Wednesday, and if you missed part of the conversation, you want to hear it again, you can always find it. We post the interviews on our show page, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. And you're definitely going to want to go back and listen to what Jim Burns had to say and maybe pass it on to someone who's just recently married. Jim Burns talking about the first few years of marriage. And we've got that interview on the website as well. MyFaithRadio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. And thank you for your year-end giving to Faith Radio.